I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Box Set Pod. We're back. We've been gone for so long, and we weren't really gone. It was the fault of one person and one person alone. Matthew Wandless, who joins us from London. Hi, Matt.
Good evening.
So you recorded the podcast last time from your end, and you did it wrong, didn't you? So everyone had to have a month without us, is that right?
Even the best of us make mistakes.
It's true. Jamie's there as well, as usual. And I've got a friend sitting in on the podcast again today called Tessa, and she's a real-life doctor, but don't ask her any medical questions because you've not been doing it for very long.
Hello.
There she is. Right, shall we? What should we talk about then?
Actually, can we just ask Tessa one question? Yeah. What's your favourite medical drama, Tessa?
Medical drama.
Was it ER? Did you used to watch ER when you were a kid?
I did watch a bit of ER. Yeah. Also, I'd probably say Scrubs, just for... That was around the time that I was... getting into things.
Is it like the more you... Sarah's a newsreader, so watching Newsroom, she just could not. It's just so far from reality in her.
Yeah.
The more you study medicine, is it more and more difficult to watch medical programs?
Definitely, yeah. I'd say so. Yeah. Bit like doing doing work.
Yeah. And Jamie watching Mindhunter, which is about serial killers. He finds that very difficult.
You just get so much wrong.
Tessa's here. We won't explain why, but she's sitting in, and she may take over this podcast one day, and that'd be a good thing. So, Handmaid's Tale, season 3. Should we begin with that? We're also going to get to the bottom tonight of The Boys, Dark on Netflix, and how I'm so excited at the return of Mindhunter, I can barely speak. There's 9 days to go until that's back as we record. By the time you listen to this, it might even be there. I can't even imagine a world where Mindhunter season 2 has already started. Oh my god. Handmaid's Tale. Who's watched Handmaid's Tale? Have you finished it, Jamie?
It's not finished. It's currently showing on Channel 4, and I think it's up to episode 8. I'm up to episode 6.
Okay.
Where are you up to, Matt?
I think I might be about the same as you. What was the last episode you watched?
The last one I watched was... We're going through spoiler points
let's
here.
Let's avoid heavy spoilers, if you can be...
Rough details.
Go on.
Roughly speaking, there was a fight. Fight between two of the handmaids.
Okay, yes. Are you
up
to that?
That's how it ended,
I don't think I'm there yet. No.
So, I mean, there was a hanging, but that doesn't pin it down.
No.
That's pretty much...
Could be any episode.
Yeah.
It was the episode with the brutal oppression of women.
It was the episode that went really, really slow and dragged itself out over an hour when it really could have been done.
Get out.
I think it's a beautifully made TV series. I think it's lovely. But I do think that it's like it couldn't be more oppressive to both the inhabitants of the show and the viewers of the show. It's really hard, isn't it?
It is.
Walk in and Sarah's got it on. It's like, right, who's hanging now? And we haven't had a rape for 20 minutes. So, come on. What are
we
doing?
The thing is, it's always had that, but it's always had a brilliant performances and an incredible intensity that keeps you gripped between the relationships between these characters and the bubbling of the tensions within that. I've always been wonderful, and and season 3, I've been disappointed by season 3 so far.
What?
And let me explain why. I can't go into too much of the plot, obviously, but I'll say this about season 3. The way they've compromised plot and character development to stretch out the storyline has disappointed me. There were things in motion at the end of season two, and I feel like they set up all these different ideas at the start, end of season two, and even slightly at the start of season three, and they've just not followed through, and they've just really strung out.
I think we're going to have to talk explicitly.
In an infuriating way.
Let's at least.
It's hard to.
All right, let's say this. I was quite excited by the idea that Yvonne Strahovski's character was going to become.
Yes.
More,
that's a very good point, Al.
She was beginning to change her mind about whether whose side she was on in some way. And from what I've seen of this series, she did for a bit and then flip flop back to being a bit of a beast. Yeah?
Yeah. Ooh.
Because she's a woman, and as soon as she smelt a baby, that was it. She became possessed.
Yeah.
Which I would say is a little bit sexist.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if it's sexist or not. I just know that I just don't believe they're doing it for the right reasons. I believe they're like they're trying to keep these characters together as well. They're trying to keep June. Yeah. And Commander Waterford and Serena all together as much as possible, and they're doing that with these kind of slightly overly Machiavellian tactics to keep them all in this kind of bubble together, which I just don't think is true to where this storyline is going. The storyline has been heading towards some kind of rebellion, some kind of revolt, and June being part of that.
Yeah,
and instead, I feel like it's gone quite far backwards in trying to hold on to this world so they can have more reveling in the drama before they again move forward with the plot, because they're going to do it again. I'm sure they'll go to that point, but this series, do you not feel like that at all? Well, Matt?
No, you know what I mean. I will grant what you're saying in the sense that the drive of it has definitely stalled, but I think it's stalled in good ways and in interesting ways. And I think the little subplot they had recently of Matthew and you know, the hangings was, I think it was quite an important aspect to show with the world that they presented with collaborators and people the oppressed who have been broken by the machine, the machinations of the oppressive regime, you know?
This is an interesting conversation.
People who can't help themselves.
This is an interesting conversation, but I do feel like it's really difficult trying not to do spoilers on it. Maybe we should just be able to use examples now, I think.
No, it's fine. That's all I want to say. But I think it's still just so solid all the time.
Yeah.
And even when they do divert off into different areas which aren't necessarily just devoted to plugging through the main thrust of the story, I always just want to see it. I want to see more. Like, we found out, I don't think it's a spoiler thing to say, we found out about our Aunt Lydia's past in this episode six. And while, I mean, both me and Hannah watched it and we weren't entirely satisfied with her backstory, but I thought it was really interesting to see how in a few degrees you can get from where she was in the world we know to where she is in the world they know. And I believe it. I can see how it would follow through, and you meet these kind of religious zealots in our society, and it's like they're frightening fucking people.
I don't know. That's like it's the old fear of like, oh, if Hitler took over, if the Nazi state kicked off again, would you be an SS officer? And I've been listening again to the 52-hour audiobook, The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich, recently. And the second time.
Wow.
It's such a good book.
Who narrates it?
Grosvenor Gardner. His name is Grosvenor Gardner, and he's got the most incredible... I'll get it up on my phone in a minute. Anyway, what becomes clear is that, you know, the guys who really were the worst of the dickheads were always dickheads before and after. In fact, you can only take over a state to that degree if you manage to employ the worst absolute knobheads. And I'm not sure about this thing about you can flip on a sixpence and one person can easily become...
No, that's not what I'm saying. Oh, okay. I'm saying that you can see the path.
Right.
Because it's someone who can function within our contemporary society, but you can also see how they're only a couple of degrees away from being Aunt Lydia.
Okay, yeah. Tessa, are you up to date with it?
I think I might have... I think I've maybe only got up to episode 5 or something.
So you've not seen a hanging recently?
No, I don't think I have. Okay. Which is surprising.
And have you felt at all like it's been dragged out?
I think there's been moments in all of the series when it's been feeling like you're just about getting there and something big's going to happen and either she's going to get free or there's going to be a big riot, and then it's not happened for another series and still nothing's happening with that. But yes. I like how it's moving. It's okay.
I think that accusing it of being slow is a little bit like accusing a whale of being big, and it's been doing that from the beginning.
Well, this is where I disagree, because I don't think you were judging it, Howell, from a point of view of, oh, this is just a slow show. I'm judging it from a point of view of knowing the characters and the world now. I feel like they are stalling the character journeys and the plot journey at a point where I know this world well enough now to know where it's going. I'm not expecting to hit the points in my head it's going to hit exactly, but I know that they've taken leaps with these characters backwards.
But I would say, I would argue almost the opposite, in that I think that it's been like that. I think that I disliked the things that I disliked about the show is that I could see that it was doing that right from the beginning. The amount, if you add up the number of hours that you've watched this woman's story and say how much has actually happened, you could definitely tell that story in about 15
minutes. Because how could you possibly know that? So you didn't even know the characters that well at that point, Howard. You didn't even know.
I just knew that they were dragging everything out beyond belief. I'm just going, this is so slow. But at least...
No.
So boring listening to you talk about this.
Oh, my God. It's a slow, drawn-out series, in my opinion. Now, the one difference
with this...
You've
just got the attention span of a tiny child.
No, I haven't. I love watching long. I've just told you that I'm listening to a 52.
Big zombie army or something like that.
I'm listening to a 52-hour audiobook for the second time. I can put up with long form things. I can just also sense when something is being made to be longer form than it needed to be, and sometimes that's great. And in many cases, in this case, it's great. I like this series because I think it is actually interesting. Whilst I agree with you, Jamie, that in terms of the characters, it's kind of bad. The political angle has been brought into this, which goes, surely once you escape a cruel regime and tell another great country about it, they're going to go, right, game's up, let's bomb them, let's get rid of this horrible regime. And actually what begins to happen is this diplomatic to-in and fro-in, which may well make things worse or certainly not help the people involved. So I think the... bringing in that dynamic has been really interesting to explore.
It is really interesting to put a totalitarian dictatorship into the middle of America.
Yeah, but this is this is how we do deal with certain dictatorships, and always did. You know, Gaddafi was best mate for many years.
Well, I mean, obviously there are places in the world where there is gross inaction against oppression and atrocities. So it's interesting to see it in a world that we understand better than far-flung places where it's a totally different existence. So I think it's fascinating, and I like seeing I like the delving that they're doing into the world. I think it's one of the it's like how I feel about The Walking Dead, where it's I don't feel that it's unnecessary or that it's drawn out. I think it's an examination, and I'm happy to watch that. I thought it was going to be wrapped up at the end of this series, and as we got further and further into it, I started to panic, thinking, how are they possibly going to finish this off this quickly?
Yeah,
and I thought it was going to be another Game of Thrones where it's like, oh no, we've only got a couple of episodes, we've got to finish this.
Yeah,
but
I think
I'm glad they're doing another series, and I want to spend, I don't want to spend more time there, but I am fascinated by it.
And now let's hand over to Tessa for the female perspective.
Oh no.
You can have 12 seconds for the female perspective, and then we'll get back to the...
And there is only one
yes.
female perspective, yeah. Let's be clear about that.
Yeah. Oppression of women, bad.
I agree. And now, would you like to hear the sound of Grosvenor Gardner, who's the man who reads me a 52-hour audiobook?
Very much.
Not so much, no thanks.
Listen to this guy's voice.
Insisting that great. All churches institute the Arian paragraph and exclude converted Jews. This was too much even for the timid Protestants who had declined to take any part in the God. Church.
What a voice. 52 hours.
Oh, sounds brilliant. Like he's going to tell you to turn left.
Well, obviously that's through my phone, so you know there's a bit more bass when you're listening through headphones or whatever. But oh,
yeah, it's almost like it was a waste of time.
No, it's brilliant. what, Hitler? Well, the Third Reich was certainly a waste of time. I would agree with that. So mixed reviews there on The Handmaid's Tale. I think the result is that we should all stop watching it and make sure it cheers up a little bit.
I still think it's a great show. Actually, it's infuriated me this series, but it's still brilliant, and I still love Elizabeth Moss. She's bloody brilliant.
She's high wonderful. Quality.
Oh,
you know that
she does some really good gurning faces in this in this series as well.
Yeah, there's really, a lot of reaction.
Oh yeah. My god, and I love it. So I give her that.
I do wonder how many times she's had to have the camera kind of locked on her yes. face and have to do something different with it this time, have to show her anguish in a different way.
Yeah.
And I imagine her with this like kind of flick book where she's going, I've done that. She's got like a book of expression.
Oh, she's so good. I'm rewatching Mad Men at the moment as well, and she's just so good.
It's great seeing her with Bradley Whitford, actually.
Yes.
Working together.
Back yes. from the West Wing, yes.
Because he's brilliant as well. And his character is fascinating.
Yeah, and I really like Lawrence. He's good.
Tessa's only watched bits of the West Wing.
I've not watched it, really. Just know what it is. And I've seen small parts.
You've got to go beginning to end and just keep going around it. It's everything you need to know.
I have... I'm up to series three now with my mum, who comes over on Tuesdays, and we have West Wing and shish kebab night.
Hey, does she make the shish kebab and you bring the West Wing, or do you make the shish kebab?
No, she comes to my house. There's a nice kebab house down the road. We get a chicken shish and a lamb kofte.
No way.
That is
we watch the West Wing.
Oh, man, I want to be in that house. It sounds yeah. fun.
Please it's pretty great. Invite Jamie. One more question on that. A serious question without saying 12 seconds for the female perspective. Is there an element of... There's an element of it, like Matt's comparison to The Walking Dead there. The heavy feel of it. Sometimes I feel like I am watching somebody's misery for too long. That I am supposed to, as a viewer, start to get pleasure out of watching the misery of somebody because it dwells on it for so long. I felt the same way in The Walking Dead. Sometimes when Rick Grimes loses the fifth family member in a row or something, and he's literally on the floor in pieces, I'm going, I start feeling sorry for the actor who's having to feel these emotions, but it lasts too long. What do you think, Tessa?
I can imagine why you struggle with it, Hal, because it's all about empathy.
Yes, I have a lot of empathy, so I do struggle with it because I feel what Elizabeth Moss is feeling, particularly when I'm doing this podcast.
I suppose if you're watching someone who's worse off than you, then, you know, it can make you feel a bit better about your situation, can't it?
Oh, the EastEnders argument.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I suppose. But then doesn't that, after a certain amount of time, become gawkish? That's, I suppose, what I'm saying.
Mm.
I almost feel like the writers of this world are purposely keeping them in this situation for our entertainment because that's what they're doing. And
it's to make the redemption all the sweeter. This is the thing about these things. It's like if you know, you do get stuff which is just misery porn, where it's just relentless and there's no kind of there's no arc to it.
But let's say Jamie's right.
You can see the destination.
But if Jamie's right about that. Jamie is right that they're keeping them in this situation literally for our entertainment so that they can have another season out of it, right? Is that what you're saying, Jamie?
I'm sorry, my cat is responding.
No one's listening, just the cat, literally.
Jamie, to an extent, I think that they are stretching the plot out this series a little bit. Yes, I do feel that.
So in which case, for a TV series that actually is supposedly trying to change the world with what it's saying, and the writers and the people behind it talk a lot about what this represents in the real world, it does genuinely annoy me to a degree that they make that decision, that they don't go, well, the story doesn't need to be this long. We need to make a point.
They won't be having that meeting, though, will they? They'll be having a meeting where they'll go...
We need
the meeting
three.
They'll have is, there's so much more of this world we can discover. Let's do a bit more of that before we go to the rebellion full. So we go to Washington and we see the horror there. And so,
well, you genuinely think that HBO haven't said to the producers, okay, we'll sign you up for another three series. Can you do that?
I don't think that it's as cynical as that.
That's how deals are done. They go, this is really successful, we want two more series, can you do that please?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know, I'm not in the room
anyway. Food for thought. We in a way, we're the ones keeping her locked up. I think that's the point that I'm making. So stop watching it, vote with your feet, and in 9 days watch Mindhunter Series 2, which is always pithy, to the point, and never unnecessarily long. Has anybody not watched Mindhunter then? So Tessa hasn't watched Mindhunter.
I've not watched it. I think I've got it downloaded to watch at some point.
Matt's a recent convert. Have you finished it, Matt?
No, I got bored with it.
You got bored with David Fincher's masterpiece Mindhunter Season 1?
Yeah.
Wow. Jamie, have you finished all of Season 1?
I did indeed.
Yeah, and are you looking forward to season two?
Yeah, I just watched the trailer for season two, and it looks good. It looks very good. I think we're going to get more into the meat of them using the techniques that they've developed to find and hunt minds. So that's exciting.
Of course, that's what they're doing, hunting minds. You're right. That makes sense now. Yes, and of course it's a true story as well, or based on.
I think I've read the book it's based on, and it's very, very loosely based on it, I think.
So do you know where it's going next then?
No, because the book it's based on isn't as plotty as this has been. You know, it's a lot more.
It's more how procedural. We developed.
It's almost like it's been padded out and kind of drawn out.
Into some
kind of narrative.
To a whole 8 episodes so far. Wow. So good. Good. Well, there's nothing more to say about that then, other than Tessa, you should definitely watch it.
I will do.
And Matthew is a lost cause. So let's move on to
a bit samey and repetitive, you know?
Big Little Lies, shall we? I haven't watched any of this series. Matt, have you?
I've watched almost all of it. I've got 2 episodes left.
Tessa, have you?
Not seen any of it. Sorry.
Have you seen any of the first series?
Just a failure. Nope.
Nothing.
Nope.
It's almost like she's been doing something actually important with her life. Jamie?
I've finished it. And I'd like to say this before. Now, we recorded a podcast, and I want listeners to know this, that we recorded a podcast that was lost to the ether. But
is this the one where
lost,
Jamie said that he didn't rate Meryl Streep? Whoa. I mean,
Powell disparaged Meryl Streep's good name when we were talking about Big Little Lies. What did you call her, Howell? Overrated?
I actually didn't.
Overrated, talentless hack, I believe, was the...
I don't think I would ever use a sentence that's that good. I said that... that's not a criticism of Meryl Streep. It's a criticism of the people who constantly say that she is Jesus Christ. And it's almost like she is the royalty. Put me in a room with Judi Dench and Meryl Streep, and I have no interest in talking to one of those people because the other one's so much better.
I'm sure they'll be devastated, Howell.
I'm sure she won't. The last thing she needs is an accolade from me, but yet it's still...
Let's really get to the nitty-gritty of what's going to happen
Meryl
in that
room.
Howell's going to be in the corner checking his phone while Dench and Meryl actually have a chat.
Yeah.
I think Dench is great. So
anyway, the point being, in Big Little Lies season 2, Meryl Streep plays a very big role, and she is absolutely stonkingly good, brilliantly good. I'm not calling her some kind of messiah, Howell. I'm just saying that she really makes this second series. We argued and about whether they should have made it. They should have made it for one reason:
Meryl Streep.
Meryl Streep. Her character is brilliant and brings so much tension and enjoyment and just excruciating moments to the screen.
That is what she's particularly good at, excruciating stuff. Yeah, she is very good at excruciating stuff, isn't she?
It's one of the curses of being that, venerated, is that, like, when we started watching this, first of all, there was the thing of, like, I didn't feel like I wanted a second series. I was perfectly happy with how it finished. So I was wondering even where they were going to take it. And then there's the thing of like, oh, Meryl Streep's in it. She better be fucking good. Mm-hmm. And both Hannah and I just turned to each other after the first scene and we're just like, how does she do that? How can she be so consistent? Mm. And it's not even it's such an unconventional choice that she makes with this character, the way she is. It doesn't look like it ought to work, but it does. Mm. And she's wonderful, and I think in fact it's the places they've taken it in series 2 are really excellent. Do you know if the source material covers this stuff or if this is entirely new?
Anyone read the book?
No idea.
The
book,
I think that somebody said the first series ended where the book ends.
Right. Okay. That's what I thought, but I wasn't sure.
That but might have been you who said it. Actually,
series 2, it's excellent.
Right. Okay. So
really fascinating.
Good. I'm very.
So are you going to watch it, Howell?
Well, I'm certainly going to watch that first scene. And if I do not turn to my wife and say, "How does Meryl do it?" then I might not carry on beyond that point. But I'm a very open-minded person. I will certainly give it a go.
They're all brilliant. I mean, and I want to. It's not just Meryl Streep, but she's the kind of the catalyst for a lot of the best drama within this second series. But I do want to mention Laura Dern as well, who plays the Renata, the rich woman who goes through a lot of drama. She has some of the best scenes.
Yeah,
brilliant, like funny, but really like outrageously ridiculous scenes.
Yes,
as well. She's brilliant in it, Laura Dern. I've never really appreciated like Laura Dern. I think of Jurassic Park. I think a bit of Twin Peaksy stuff as well, and Blue Velvet.
Listen,
she's so good in this.
Please,
so good.
Please don't attack me when I say this. But this is just my opinion. Laura Dern is for me a really good example of someone who can really irritate you on purpose, and she knows it. She's playing a character who's irritating, and you actually go, "Oh my god, I hate that woman." And Meryl Streep, I am never irritated by her. I'm always aware that Meryl Streep is doing an amazing performance as an irritator.
Yeah, I'm remembering this from the last time.
She's always acting. I always want to go, just Meryl, tone it down.
Always acting, you turd.
Yes, but when someone's a really good actor, they just annoy you, or you're really scared by them. You don't go, "Oh, they've put on a scary voice. Aren't they impressive?" We shouldn't be sitting watching something going, "Aren't they impressive?" Should we?
What? I mean, no. We shouldn't
be impressed by people. God, no.
No, I mean, in the moment, like, we can sit and do a podcast where we go, "Wow, she's been." Yvonne Strahovski's a great example of someone in Thingy, Handmaid's Tale, who
I thought you were going to say Chuck. Jesus.
And Chuck, in fact. But in Handmaid's Tale, in the first series, she's genuinely an annoying person who people in the street would meet her and go, "I hate you in that thing." I don't think Meryl Streep's ever had someone say, "I hate you in that thing." I think they just go, "Hi, Meryl, you're brilliant."
I don't know what the point of what you're saying is.
This one is that new.
I'm always aware I'm watching an actress rather than watching a character with Meryl Streep.
Well, I think that's absolute twattery.
Okay. Fair enough. I told you that'd be nice.
Well, anyway, give it a go, Howell. And I really, you should watch this then. Because if you come away from watching, and I don't want you to watch just one scene.
Tell me what will happen. If I walk away from this and say, she's still too big an actress for me, she's just demonstrative all the time, what are you going to do? Is it going to make you like me more or less?
Well,
because I only want you to like me more.
I just think we'll leave it. We'll never speak of it again, all right?
We'll just leave it cold, hanging in the air.
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
One day, like a family do a podcast. I want to get Sarah on the podcast.
Yeah.
And I want to just talk to her. I want to understand what's going on with her and you and how she does it.
Well, it's a lot like the relationship you and I have, Matt. People don't understand why I get under their skin so much. But before you know it, we will be married. And then you wake up one day and go, what the hell?
I can believe it. I don't know why I keep coming back. It's like an abusive relationship.
Exactly. All right, that's Big Little Lies. Dark on Netflix is a German series, and I was told by lots of people this is a phenomenal... Oh, it's the best thing ever. Oh, I find it so boring.
I remember this now because someone told me the same thing.
Yeah.
And I remember it was like, it's quite old now, right? Fairly early days Netflix when we were scrounging around for things to watch and people going, oh, maybe you've got to watch Dark. It's amazing.
Right.
And whoever told us to watch it neglected to mention that it was German. And Hannah and I sat down, we watched it, and it's like the opening scene is there's a load of silence, and then some stuff happens, and then someone starts talking, and we both went, oh, no. We were in one of those moods where it was pure... like, I can't watch something with subtitles right now.
Oh, good. I thought you were going to say someone with Germans. We all thought that was going towards some... racism against Germans, didn't we?
No, it was just like, okay. Oh, subtitles, fuck off. There's no way we were watching it at that point.
And that title was misleading, because if it's called Dark,
I mean,
the German word for dark is Dunkel. They should have called it Dunkel. It should not be allowed.
It's not as good a name, is it? No. Willkommen ins Dunkel.
So hang on, why are we talking language. About it? Are we talking about it just to slag it off? Or?
Yeah, pretty much. I wanted to know if anyone had got to the end of it and does think it's absolutely phenomenal. Did you watch it?
Well, I've watched all of it.
You have? So really, I want to say Stranger Things, but it's nothing like Stranger Things.
Well,
it's set partly
it's
in the
80s. Sci-fi, time travel, adventure. Well, not even adventure, I wouldn't say adventure, drama. Yeah. In which people's lives within this small village in Germany are affected both in the past and the future by a chain reaction of events. And
we're wondering
what's going on. Trying to undo those events only makes more events happen and so on. It goes on like that.
Right.
It's very convoluted, and it gets even more convoluted as it goes along.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Quick 1 out of 10?
I mean, you know, it's not awful. It doesn't upset me. But it also, I feel like...
Have you finished it?
The payoff I'm waiting for... No, but I feel like literally last night, Sarah and I went, whatever the payoff is, it's not worth waiting for, is it? Well, no,
Jamie,
let's watch
Jamie,
something
what
else.
What would you give it out of 10?
I'd go 6, and I'm giving it 6. My brother really likes it, but 6. We argue about it because it's just... I have problems with time travel shows, dramas in a lot of ways, because... You know how a lot of them are about how, oh, you've got to stop this thing from happening, but when you try and stop that thing from happening, you actually make that thing happen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's a lot of that going on. And it just makes you feel like everything that happens is futile. Like the drama is futile because you're not stopping anything from happening. You're actually making the thing happen that you're trying to stop, you know.
A lot
and it gets really frustrating.
A lot like Handmaid's Tale. Everything you do is futile because you keep coming back. I'm sorry. So, yes, I agree completely. It's almost like, okay, we get it. We now understand the butterfly effect. And also, we just don't care enough about what's going on. And It's interesting. If it was an early Netflix thing, Matt, it was probably a lot more impressive back then. I think we've been spoiled by better sci-fi stuff since that point, so that would make
but
sense.
It sounds great. I have to say, the way you described it made me interested.
Yeah, try it. Try it.
I'm not going to. No, 6 out of 10 is like the worst possible rating.
Okay. Yeah, no, exactly. So, The Boys is a new series on Amazon Prime, and it's a superhero story. If what if the team of superheroes, what if the Avengers and everyone were actually part of a large corporation that were cynical? It was about the shareholder. It was. They plan strategically with the marketing department which crimes they're going to save. There's also a very dark side to them. What if they cause more damage than good, but they have a big PR department behind them? The premise is that the catalyst is a... This is in the first episode. A boy is walking down the street with his girlfriend, and she gets run over by a very fast-running superhero who squishes her to pieces. She explodes in front of him because he was running past at light speed. And he tries to get an apology from this superhero who doesn't even stop to apologise, just says, I've got to go and save some crime. And the sort of premise is, what if you then tried to exact revenge on the superheroes? And that's kind of where we go. It's funny, it's gruesome, but not completely gruesome, but necessarily so. It's good. It's different, and it's not completely addictive, but it's really well played and it's well shot. And Simon Pegg plays an American dad in it, which is interesting. I'm not sure what place he's going to have in it, but he's beefed himself up. You know, really beefed himself up. So I wonder if there's going to be some element of him being a super.
Who's
person.
Beefed himself up?
Simon Pegg.
Has he?
Yes. Literally, of everything I just said, Matt Hurd beefed himself up. That was everything that Matt listened
to. No. Yeah. Because I just didn't notice that. He's playing one of the main characters' dads.
That's right. Yes.
And the twist on that being that in the original comic book, the original graphic novel of The Boys, the character Huey, who Simon Pegg is playing the dad of now, was drawn as Simon Pegg.
Oh, yeah. Good fact. Yeah. Wow.
That is a good fact.
Have you read the source material?
No.
No, I read it a long time ago. So the comic is originally by Garth, not Jennings.
Marenghi.
Garth. No. Ennis, his name is, I think.
Right.
And I read it when I was in my early 20s, I think, maybe. And I thought it was fucking brilliant. Mm-hmm. And I remember hearing a couple of years ago that they were going to make it into a TV show. And I was like, how the fuck are they going to do that? Because it is one of the most... graphic, pornographic and violent comics I have ever read.
It's not very pornographic, and they've kept the graphic down. But for example, a young woman has always wanted to be in the superhero team, and in episode one she achieves her dream of being selected to be part of this corporation, part of the Seven or whatever they're called.
It's the Justice League, basically.
And she, her first experience is one of her idol's superheroes asking her to give him a blowjob. And that pretty much sets up both the... I mean, it's really dark comedy. And
it's extremely dark. And
it's a great spin.
How far are you into it, Hal?
Two or three.
Okay, I think I'm about 4 or 5. It's going to get worse.
Just had the like death of an important character. Put it that way.
Okay. But I thought it was a really interesting idea when I read the original book. This whole thing of like, you know, the two main comic houses, DC and Marvel. First of all, their characters were all just kind of ultra heroic, totally poster children for, you know, honor and truth and whatever. And then gradually, as they went on and on and on, and, you know, hundreds and thousands of episodes, they started to delve more into kind of the dark side of these characters and the difficulty of being a hero and that sort of thing. But it was still ultimately good. But in this now, what we have is this idea of heroes who are known throughout the world having this, being celebrities,
yeah,
and doing all the bad things that come with celebrity. So, but then it's taken to an even further degree where they've sort of lost touch with the value of life, even. And there are some incredibly callous moments coming up that you're going to see, and it's a weird one in terms of the way the show is done. I watched the first episode and I really wasn't sure if I was going to enjoy it, but I've stuck with it because it's done in a sort of, did you ever see Sin City?
Yes.
Yeah. It's sort of halfway between Sin City and a normal superhero film where it's got that sort of heightened edge to it. Where it's not like, no one's being played straight down the line. I think they're sort of aware of the inherent absurdity of what they're doing. But it's very high budget.
Yeah,
and it's ticking along at a fair old rate, and I think it's pretty good actually.
It does. It's got a really good pace to it, unlike Handmaid's Tale, which is a bit slow. It's moving. It's cracking along. It's great, and power does corrupt, and that's what it's about. It's about the power of celebrity corrupting. A little bit like when Meryl Streep had a go at Walt Disney when she was presenting an award to Emma Thompson for saving Mr. Banks, which just seemed very inappropriate. I mean, it was Emma's award, and she took the chance to claim that Walt was an anti-Semite, which he wasn't, because, you know, he employed a lot of Jewish people. A lot of his best friends were Jewish, so to say he was an anti-Semite is just obviously incorrect. Thanks for listening tonight. And thanks for... Tessa, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. Thanks for
Be welcome to come back when you've watched some television.
Yep, I'll get working on that.
That would be great. And we'll see you next time when we will be able to talk about Mindhunter Season 2. That is, all of us who have great taste and are able to stick with it. Good night. Anyone else saying good night? Anyone saying goodbye?
Bye! That's how you do a podcast there, Tess.
Thanks.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.